This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Brian Koberger picked up a phone. That's the event. That's the entire thing. A man serving four consecutive life terms in segregated housing in Idaho's maximum security prison south of Boise got himself to a phone, called a reporter at the New York Times, and explained why he was finally speaking up. His words, "Why am I breaking my silence? A lot went wrong in those plea discussions. I really want to be heard." He really does want to be heard. Oh, poor little Bri. Are you getting bored there in prison? Is it not the wonderful place you thought it would be when you thought, "I'm going to go and try and do this horrible crime and get away with it," and then it failed, and now you get to take the ride in the prison system and die there? Sorry. The arrogance, the narcissism, the delusions of this pathetic blob of human flesh are really stunning at this point. 13 months of silence. Four dad's college students, a guilty plea. He entered himself out loud in a courtroom four separate times. And the message he sat on for over a year and then delivered to one of the biggest newspapers in the country is that he'd like some attention, please. There's paperwork attached to it, a petition he wrote himself. He's his own attorney now because he's attacking Ann Taylor, his old attorney. Oh, wouldn't it be fun if Ann Taylor came out and said some shit? Talked about what it was like representing that thing. A petition for post-conviction relief. Entered July 27th of 2026 in Ada County District Court. According to the docket, he filed it himself, no attorney, and his handwriting on the original document looks like that of a serial killer. Gee, I wonder why. And in his statement, he went ahead. I mean, you would think like that's just kind of the funny part. You know, there's jokes about that, about, oh, your writing looks like a serial killer. He made no effort to not make his writing look like a serial killer. This is me. This is me telling you I'm not a serial killer while writing like a serial killer, while talking like one. That's kind of the symptom. That's part of the behavior of someone who is a serial killer. They're not quite aware how much the rest of the world is aware of their tells. And Brian, as we know, wasn't one to read the room. Little incel Bri. According to the docket, he filed it himself, no attorney, and in his statement, he went ahead and invited prosecutors to come after the death penalty all over again. Brian, the case is over. Nobody's coming after you to chase you. Just because you phone a reporter and go, "Come get me." Hey, dipshit, they already got you. They don't need to do anything. You've been gotten. Full stop. It's laughable. Put the death penalty back on the table. Now, it seems you're suffering more alive. Go on now. Dinner is coming soon. Go back to your cage, little boy. Go back to your cage. No one's coming to get you. You pathetic waste of DNA material. Your organs should be harvested for people who need them. Your flesh should be cut and used for radical reconstructive plastic surgery for burn victims, leaving nothing but your skeletal remains in a cell which roaches can feast on. Or the cannibal next to one of the Tate brothers. They can feed him too. I mean, let's cut him up and put him right next to you. I'm totally cool with putting a Tate brother in a cell with you and let you two just kind of duke it out until you're done. And until both of you are dead. But I digress. Tell us how you really feel, Tony. Inviting prosecutors to come after you with a death penalty. Sounds enormous, right? Until you remember that saying it costs him nothing. Nobody is refiling capital charges because a man in solitary confinement sent out a press release. It's like you studied criminology. You studied how this shit works. Do you? Oh, my God. There is one sentence he said in July of 25 under oath with the judge looking right at him. He's the only witness to it. And the reason all of this goes nowhere. Kaylee Gonzalez was 21. Madison Mogan, 21. Zana Kernodal, 20. Ethan Chapin, 20. Three roommates and Kernodal's boyfriend is in an off-campus house in Moscow, Idaho, in the early hours of November 13th, 2022. That's where it all happened. Two other students were in that house and were not harmed. I'm not here to go over the whole crime again. Koberger was a criminology PhD student at Washington State. About 20 minutes across the state line in Pullman, investigators arrested him nearly 7 weeks later after using genetic genealogy to work backwards to his name. The evidence is the reason nobody in Idaho is nervous. A white Hyundai Elantra matching the one caught on security footage near the house, a phone that left his home and went dark for a window that mattered, an Amazon account showing he'd bought a K-bar knife and sheath months earlier, and the sheath itself left behind at the scene carrying his DNA. That's the body of evidence he now calls a work of fiction. On July 2nd of 2025 in Ada County, he stood in front of a judge, Stephen Hippler, and answered a series of questions with the words yes. Then he said guilty 4 times, once for each of them, as their names were read into the room. Judge Hippler gave him 4 consecutive life sentences on the murder counts and the maximum 10 years on the burglary. He was never required to explain why he did it. He didn't at the plea. He didn't at sentencing. He hasn't in 13 months since. And he didn't in the statement his family passed along. So read what he actually wrote. Not the headline about it, the actual words. Circumnavigated by a broken plea. He wanted to get that book title in there of the author who doesn't know shit that wrote about it. In my opinion. The trial never provided the public the clarity conductive to closure. He's using big words because it makes him feel like he's a big person with his micro penis. And justice shall remain abjectly miscarried unless that plea is withdrawn. That's not a legal argument. That's a man who found a thesaurus. A real ineffective assistance claim is boring, structurally, deliberately boring. It names a specific advice that was wrong. It attaches a date to it. It says, on this day, my attorney told me this exact thing. It was false, and here is a sworn affidavit backing it up. It's a document built for one reader, a judge who has seen 1,000 of them and can spot a real one inside 4 paragraphs. His has adjectives, myopic, abjectly blatant. He called the state's view of the case myopic and a work of fiction. He wrote that justice was circumnavigated. Nobody circumnavigates justice. You circumnavigate a continent. And across all of it, with 13 months of drafting time, a doctorate in criminology and unlimited hours in a cell with nothing else to do, he never says what the false promises were. He never names the disinformation. He never touches a single piece of the evidence. Not the car, not the phone, not the sheath with his DNA on it. 13 months, and he produces no facts. So look at who it was written for. He didn't file through counsel. He had a defense team the state of Idaho paid for. And this went in alone, with him acting as his own lawyer. The statement didn't go to the court first. It went to a newspaper through his family on a Sunday night. I question any family that's still standing by his side. And by the way, Koberger family, he's claiming you're standing by him. Now is the time to stand up and say you are or you aren't. Unless you would like to be dragged into this nightmare as well. We're happy to do that. We've kept you out for a long time because we've sympathized with the shit you must be going through. But if you'd like to take his side, we welcome you to the table. We welcome it. We'll gladly dig into you guys as well to further explain the fucking nightmare of a child that you created or sibling that you endured. It might be time to step up and say your piece. If he's misrepresenting your words and how you truly feel. He thanked everyone who believes in his innocence and sent his love to the family who never wavered in that belief. Just because he says they never wavered in that belief doesn't mean it's true. Just like his bullshit of miscarriage of justice or whatever other thesaurus words he found to try and make him sound more intelligent than he actually is. Nobody thanks a fan base in a legal brief. And I question really anyone who still believes that this man is innocent. I question their mental health greatly. And the fan base is real. When Christy Gonzalez sat in that courtroom at his sentencing listening to what was done to her daughter, somebody texted her to say that sitting near her and watching her was a joke and that she knew Brian was innocent. Isn't that special? Somebody with that little going on in their lives that they want to text that to the family of a murder victim, a parent of a murder victim whose child was violently taken from this planet by this monstrosity of a human being. But you know better. You're going to text that to them. Look, even if you think that, why are you doing that? That's like psychotic behavior in itself. Like that should be like arrestable and probably put to death in Tony land. If Tony were running the country and you're texting a parent of a child who was murdered, that they're a joke? I'm sorry, that's instant death penalty for you. But they didn't kill anybody. They said, I'm sorry, there's no more air left for you. We just don't need you here anymore. Because that's pretty sick behavior. That's the audience. That's who that phone call was for. That's who his little, you know, serial killer written brief or filing was written for. Then there's the phrase, called it a broken plea. Broken plea is the title of the shitty book about his own case, written by Chris Whitcomb, who we were going to have on the show, and then we read part of the book and said, fuck it, this is a piece of shit and really is not worth our time. A book that floated the theory that Koberger may not have understood or participated in the decision to plead guilty. Whitcomb says he has never spoken to him. Well, good job, Whitcomb. You inspired him with your bullshit book. That really sucks and was hard to even get through the first handful of chapters before myself and Robin Drake, the chief of the counterintelligence program of the FBI, behavioral analysis program, also said, the fuck is this? And we stopped reading. And we withdrew our invite to be on the program because your book is shit, in my opinion. The innocence theory isn't even his. He read the coverage about himself, found a hypothesis he liked, and put his name on it.
Sources say the argument is ineffective counsel that his lawyers failed him on July 2nd, 25, under oath in front of Judge Hippler. Brian Koberger endorsed his defense team. He acknowledged on the record that the legal team led by Ann Taylor had performed to his satisfaction. The Gonzalez family points out that he told the judge he was admitting the crime knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently. He wasn't alone in that room either. By the family's account, he walked in with four lawyers after he and his counsel had spent 2 years going through the discovery. He said it out loud in the room, on tape, in the transcript, in front of the world. So the only witness on earth prepared to testify against Brian Koberger's sworn statement is Brian Koberger. The bar isn't the friendly one either. Under Idaho's rules, a defendant who wants a plea back before sentencing gets a relatively lenient standard, withdrawal for any fair and just reason. Once the sentence comes down, that door closes and is a much smaller one that opens. Manifest injustice, a clear fundamental miscarriage of justice, and because a post-conviction petition is a civil action, the entire burden of proof sits on him. Defense attorney Joshua Ritter put it in plain English, Koberger would have to show manifest justice, which essentially means proving that his lawyers lied to him. He'd have to prove his lawyers lied, using himself as the only witness against his own sworn testimony, that they didn't. The Gonzalez family told the took the petition apart in a single paragraph. In their statement, they note that he never cried foul, never claimed he was uninformed or pressured, and never suggested there was anything wrong with the discovery he'd been reviewing for 2 years. He chose not to leave his fate or the facts to a jury. Asked whether he was actually guilty, he answered yes. They also gave him the only title he's earned, the mosquito. You just can't seem to swat. Except mosquito's more endearing. And Taylor's office declined to comment. They don't need to say anything. The transcript already did. This isn't a close call. It isn't a cliffhanger. Treating it like one would be doing his publicity for him. He wrote a press release and filed a form. The real question isn't whether it works. It's why he gets to do it at all. Let's start with what never happened. There was no trial, which means there was never a moment where a prosecutor stood up and walked 12 people through the why. No testimony, no cross-examination, no record of motive, because he was never required to give one and nobody ever made him. There is a hole in that file exactly where an explanation belongs, and the only person narrating that hole now is him. He's the last one standing with a microphone because the state handed him the room. In July of 25, before any of this, Lado County prosecuting attorney Bill Thompson wrote a letter to the families. The Idaho Statesman reported what it said. The letter told them the agreement ensures the defendant will be convicted and will spend the rest of his life in prison. It also told them the deal would not be able to put you and the families through the uncertainty of decades of post-conviction appeals. In writing, signed to four sets of parents, that was the product, not justice, not accountability, protection from the exact thing that just happened. And it worked on people. The Chapin family supported the deal. Madison Mogan's father, Ben Mogan, told CBS News he felt relieved. Those are people who did the hardest thing available to them. They let go of the trial. They let go of the death penalty. And they made peace with finality. Because finality is what an officer of the court promised them on paper. The Gonzalez family never bought a word of it. They gave a hard no when prosecutors raised the idea on a Friday. The deal arrived by email on Sunday without their input. They met with prosecutors again on Monday to say one more time that they wanted the death penalty. And afterwards, they said that all of their efforts did not matter. They also wrote this, and it reads differently now than it did then. He was too afraid to die, but he wasn't afraid to kill. He wanted a plea deal, and he was given one. Kaylee wasn't offered a plea deal. The state showed him mercy by removing the death penalty. He showed Kaylee none. And at the sentencing, Steve Gonzalez stood in front of Koberger and told him he's a coward who has been protected by the court since day one. That his days of being protected were coming to an end. They weren't. He had one protection left that nobody told those families about. He agreed not to appeal. That was the trade. But post-conviction relief isn't something a defendant can sign away. The Supreme Court settled that in 2019 in a case called Graza v. Idaho, an Idaho case out of Idaho's own courts. Anyone drafting a letter that promised Idaho families no post-conviction appeals had access to that decision. Karen Northington, Zanneker Nuttall's mother, said she didn't think he could do this. She said it was part of the stipulation in the first place, that he wasn't going to be able to do this. She isn't wrong about what she was told. She's wrong about what it was worth. That the competency of the prosecutor should still remain in question. That Santa Claus, as we called him from day one, may not be the best prosecutor for the job. Clearly he wasn't. The filing being worthless doesn't make this smaller. It makes it worse. He has nothing. No case, no lawyer, no facts, no path. And with nothing from his cell, he can still reach into the lives of four families on an ordinary afternoon and take a year of their peace off the table. It isn't because he's formidable. It's because somebody promised those families a wall that was never standing. Thank you, Santa. According to the Idaho Statesman, this case has cost Idaho taxpayers over $8 million, with nearly $5.5 million of that going to Koberger's public defense team, the same team he now says failed him in a document he filed without a lawyer. $8 million, and what those families got for it was a promise that broke. The Lehigh County Prosecutor's Office says it's prepared to defend the conviction. Their statement says they're saddened that the admitted murder of Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonzalez, Ethan Chapin, and Zanneker Nuttall continues his efforts to victimize their families and friends. Continues. The office that promised this couldn't happen is now narrating it happening. Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador says his office stands ready to do whatever is necessary to ensure justice is fully carried out. Fine. There's nothing here to carry out against. That's the point. He built something that cannot win and was never designed to win. It was only ever designed to be read. He has no currency left, not freedom, not a legal theory, not a shot at a trial, attention. It's the only thing anyone can still hand him. And the moment he asked, everyone handed it over at once. The Gonzalez family said that part out loud as well. Their statement went straight after the New York Times and the reporter for handing him a platform. And they're right, and it includes us. No point pretending otherwise. But none of this is actually about him. He's a man in a cell writing essays about himself. It's about the letter four families were told in writing. This exact thing could never reach them. It reached them anyway, and the office that made the promise is now describing it in a statement to the press. He wanted to be heard. He already was. On July 23rd of 25, Kaylee's sister, Olivia, stood up in that courtroom and told him he's a delusional, pathetic, hypochondriac loser who thought he was smarter than everybody else. She told him nobody is scared of him. Nobody is intimidated by him. Nobody is impressed by him. And nobody thinks he's important. People in the room applauded when she sat down. That's the hearing he says he wants back. Oh, it didn't go so well for little Bri. The Gonzalez family put the rest of it plainly. He received exactly what he asked for, a deal that spared his life, then added one more line about that life. He hates it. 13 months alone with nothing to do but read about himself, and the best he could do was produce a letter to a newspaper. Aubrey Gonzalez said something about her sister and the other three that will outlast every word Brian Koberger ever writes. They're not just the Idaho Four. They were sons and daughters, siblings and friends, real people with real dreams. Kelly Gonzalez doesn't get to call a reporter. Madison Mogan doesn't release a statement through her family. Zanneker Nuttall doesn't get 13 months to think over and come back with a better version of events. Ethan Chapin doesn't get a do-over. He got all of it. And he used it to say nothing at all. Got a thesaurus and put big words in a in a document. Ooh, good job, Bri. You're real smart. You're real smart. Time to go back to your incel club. Watch a little bit more. Watch a few more movies and fantasize about being people you'll never be. People that actually succeeded at things. People that were far more sophisticated and complicated of a mind than you. You are a simpleton. You are a pathetic, pathetic, small simpleton. And I mean small in all the places. I mean, you know it too. I mean, that's where half the insecurity, I'm sure, comes from. Brian, there's a broomstick heading your way sometime. Don't know when, don't know how. But at some point, the people, the authorities in that prison will go, you know, I think it might be time for Gen Pop. Might be time for you to meet some of your fellow inmates. And that'll be a lovely day. Because you know what? You ain't gonna last long. The Grim Reaper is right outside your cell. They've been shouting at you. They've been banging. They've been flooding it. They've been making life a living hell, which you clearly don't like. And soon that broomstick will find you in the hands of your cellmates. It will enter one part of your body. It will come out the other. And you won't be around to talk about it anymore. But you'll be able to remember it for a period of time. And that remembering, that agony, that hell, that will be Christmas morning to so many people. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it right there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go to another happy topic. A little comic relief here today. 13 months after Brian Koberger pled guilty to murdering four University of Idaho students, he's picked up the phone and said, it wasn't me. Really? Because I kind of caught you red-handed doing all the horrible shit. It wasn't me. And then you admitted it in court, and Olivia Gonzalez ate your fucking lunch. It wasn't me. That's what he's doing. He's raising his hand and saying, it wasn't me. Ooh, that's special. I'm not a killer. Are you an airplane tomorrow, Brian? Are you a dinosaur tomorrow? That's exciting. It's glad to see you're playing pretend and pretending you're things that you're not. He wrote a letter to the New York Times, or called the New York Times, a reporter who then decided this would be a good story for clicks, and decided to publish that Brian Koberger had called him and said, it wasn't me. Brian went to a thesaurus, used a whole bunch of big words that he thought made him sound smart, and then wrote a petition claiming that he should get a new trial.
Based on a BS book.
Based on a shitty book that we decided not to have the author on our show of, because we started trying to read it. And like over the weekend, we're like, can you read another chapter of this? Cause I can't. Yeah. So that happened. And it's kind of full stop. He doesn't really have a path for a new trial. I want to talk to Bob about this and see if there really truly is. I mean, technically, is there a path for anything in the legal system? Yes. There's usually some road that can change or thing that can happen. And, you know, anything is possible. And, you know, Santa might come down the chimney tonight, too. Is it likely? Probably not. But it's noise. And it's Brian Koberger who had admitted to it, and that's where it sat, that he admitted to it. Now he's saying, it wasn't me. Robin, are you surprised?
No, but I love every moment of it because it shows how much he's suffering. You know, I like that he didn't get the death penalty because he is suffering so much more behind bars. One of the things that he's arguing that what was the exact wording? He didn't get what he was promised or because he's being tortured by fellow prisoners behind bars. good. You know, you see that visceral response I get? This is scorn. This is so good. And the Gonzaleses came out with their statement that said, good, bring it, because now we can put the death penalty back on. I mean, just the fact that he's arguing this, and he's using the same verbiage that they had in, I don't even know that author's name that put out that trash, you know, saying that it didn't go to trial because of mishandling or whatever the hell he's saying. We tried reading the book and it was just total bunk. His defense attorney, she did a great job. She did all she could. She saved his life, even though it really shouldn't have been. But Bob will be able to weigh in better than this, but this to me is just comical. Just comical, because he doesn't have a leg to stand on. Even if he was to get some legs in this, he's his own attorney on this. Let's watch the show. I mean, it's just going to be, are you kidding me?
I mean, it is entertaining just to kind of watch. I'm trying to pull up the full text here because I want to read the appeal letter, which is funny. He wrote in by hand. He hand wrote this, and You know the joke where it's like you have the handwriting of a serial killer? He has the handwriting of a serial killer. And he did nothing to squash that down at all. It's just like, oh, the serial killer's writing a letter saying it wasn't him in the handwriting of a serial killer. I mean, it just shows how ultimately dumb this guy is.
Yes.
And how he thinks he's such a deep thinker, and he thinks he's just so ironic, and he's just so this or that. And at the end of the day, what a buffoon he is.
You know,
just
the great research,
utter fucking buffoon he is.
Yeah, the great research out there will tell you that it's never IQ that determines how successful you are in your life. It's always EQ, the emotional intelligence. And without fail, every single case we cover, the level of emotional intelligence of these abhorrent buckets of genetic goo is zero. And every time you have someone like Koberger trying to write, because everyone say, well, if they're so stupid, how come they get away with these things sometimes? Well, it's because you have bungling idiots sometimes that do things wrong, or they just happen to dumb luck themselves into it. But the thing that always trips people up on these things is their low emotional intelligence, because they see themselves as victims, they see themselves as wound collectors, and they're going to get retribution, and they have zero emotional intelligence. They don't know themselves, they don't know others, they can't problem solve, and they get emotionally hijacked. They're completely idiots. And so when guys like Koberger start spewing stuff, sit back and watch a show of someone that has zero ability to interact. Plus, on top of that, very clearly undiagnosed by me because I'm not a licensed clinician, but very, very clearly high on psychopathy.
1,000%. Can I pull this up? I'm going to see if I can show you over here. People has published the...
Yeah, no, Bob's dying that he can't be on with us right now.
So, I mean, this is the writing of what it looks like. I mean, the writing of a serial killer or a third grader. One of the two.
Still,
he's not in third grade, so I think we know what's going on here. I'm going to read it because it's story time.
Yeah.
I wish we had some story time music or something. Do we have anything like...
Oh, did you hear me? Oh, I'm sorry. You and I watched Clarkson's Farm. Little digress for everyone. And what do the Irish do? Yeah. I just give you yeah.
Yeah, I wish we... Do we have... We'll go with this. Okay.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Here we go. It is hereby declared... I should start... Okay, so this is his handwriting. Brian C. Koberger, he wrote in the... being first duly sworn on oath, deposes and says, and here's where he fills in those blanks. It is hereby declared that during attorney-client discussions, most of within included all members of Brian C. Koberger's immediate family, which is interesting to note, and I'll say this to the Brian C. Koberger family, now's the time to declare your allegiance. Are you on Brian's side, or are you on the side of the victims? Because I'm going to tell you this, he's calling you out, and he's saying that you're on his side. And I'll tell you what, if you are, and he's going to start using you as like name pieces, you better declare your side, because if you are on his side, okay, you are now open game as well for us to discuss and dig into what exactly made this little fucking evil monster that is Brian Koberger. We haven't touched any of you because we feel horrible. I can't believe going through this, but if you're going to dig in deeper and think little Bri couldn't have done this, we'll find out exactly what made this shit show. So
I think it's time to say what you believe.
And it'll be also interesting to see if his parents now foot the bill for actually paying for a lawyer for him.
Because believe me, there's fucking questions.
Oh my God. Thankfully, we can finally put this horrendous chapter in life behind us, and he brought it up again. They got to do it again.
Like, it's time to call out Lil Bri and put him to task for what he did. And if you don't believe me, there's questions. Looking at janitor dad bumbling around the yard doesn't look like the finest specimen of human DNA, in my opinion. So I'm wondering what the fuck's going on there. And I question a lot of what's going on there. But we will. I digress.
Yeah, Brent Turvey, that's the guy.
I digress. I do question what the fuck. But anyhow, let's go back to Lil Bri's letter, who's claiming that you're standing by his side like Sade. Continuing on. A petitioner was convinced to falsely confess to capital murder and felony burglary by coercion, disinformation, false promises, and the withholding of exculpatory discovery. The following is material to the inception of the plea. Counsel's failure to inform petitioner of exculpatory discovery received during plea discussions, namely clumps of unknown hair found in Ethan Chapin's hands, as well as the failure of further inquiry. Two, petitioner was convinced that actual guilt was not an important factor in considering plea acceptance. I can't help you're an idiot, Brian. That's kind of like what that is. Death row was imminent and advised to lie. Petitioner was given a legal victory in entering a false plea. A gross misrepresentation of and promises regarding what a life sentence would immediately afford petitioner, and a gross misrepresentation of death row in Idaho, including an elaborate fabricated story of counsel's horrific experiences touring an actual 6x8 death, that's the end of first page, row cell, all communicated to petitioner as his and his family, allegedly by IDOC through counsel, thus constituting threats and promises made to incite, I think it's supposed to say, or endure, incite, I can't tell what the fuck he wrote, a plea agreement. Signed, Brian Sicoberger.
Basically saying that he was promised life in prison was better than this.
Basically. They said there was going to be cookies.
Oh, God. The fact he wrote this, you know, so here's what's really great. Thank God for that moron that wrote that horrible book, because without that book, Koberger would not have done this and brought us such great entertainment. So we wouldn't see him suffering so much.
I needed a laugh.
I'm not a human being that likes watching other human beings suffer, but this is one, because he's not a human being. Again, abhorrent bucket of genetic goo.
I needed a good laugh today.
I hope we get more. I mean, it's not going to get another trial. Obviously, Bob's very vehement on as well. But I really hope that we get a little bit more entertainment out of watching him suffer a little bit.
I mean, again, I mean, I Bob, you need to be here because I got questions for you.
his messages are great on the chat.
I know. He says it's killing me. But I mean, okay, Bob, I'm just going to ask you in chat. You tell me. I mean, is there any iota of where of this could possibly go anywhere? I mean, if he can back up some of these claims that he was bamboozled into accepting this agreement and told that there was, I mean, it reads pretty shittily. I mean, but is there any ground, I guess, for any of this? I mean, an attorney at some point
And Ann Taylor did her job, in my view. I mean, she stood by him and tried to find every possible road that could go down, and at the end of the day, knew there was no road to go down here.
I tell you what, until I listened to Kevin Reddington, she was up there. You know, Kevin Reddington, you know, you got Bob Mata, Kevin Reddington, and Ann Taylor, the top three we've seen in the last couple of years, right?
It's just, is there any scintilla of possibility that this does go anywhere? I mean, is there anything... The very strong defense that Ann Taylor put up for Brian Koberger, is there any judge in the world that looks at that and says, yeah, you weren't served by your public defender and you deserve a second chance? And the fact that Koberger is basically asking to have the death penalty, like, put back up and try me for that. I mean, does this go anywhere? Is this just some moron grandstanding from his cell because he was bored on a Tuesday and everybody needed some content?
Okay. Or you want the better bananas.
Brian, you picked a wrong week to do this because there's a lot of shit going on. You should have done this a couple weeks ago where it was more quiet. You would have gotten a lot more attention than what you're getting on this. But I just don't see it going anywhere. No. His argument is bad counsel. So there's a named attorney who spent 2 years on this case, you know, has her reputation riding on an accusation that she can't answer. Her office declined to comment. She's gagged by her own ethics rules while he talks to the New York Times. I'm wondering, again, good question for Bob, too, is Ann Taylor gagged by those ethics rules now that the client is out there saying that he didn't have adequate counsel? Can she now? I'd love to hear her story. I'd love to hear what the hell she thought was going on. If she's no longer counsel, is she still bound by those rules? I don't know the answer to that question.
I think she's too professional, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I do too.
And someone asked, might ask Mr. Drieg, why are they not trying to work with Koberg behind, you know, kind of like what they have the deal with, like, BAU and stuff, I'm guessing, is what that kind of question is. Maybe. Yeah. So here, I know that Rex Huerman made the deal to talk to BAU, part of his plea agreement. Understand this, though. Professors like Ramsland, which was his professor, as well as the BAU people, everyone on the face of the planet will try to attempt to interview him to gain knowledge for future cases, so you can create profiles and expand our knowledge base for really broken-brained individuals. But it really is up to them whether they accept that or not. Rex Huerman was part of that thing. Someone like Koberger, believe it or not, would love the ability to do that because it gives their ability to relive it. It gives a notoriety. It puts the attention on them. I'd be curious whether they actually haven't had an interaction with him already. They may have. If not, they'll definitely be trying if they haven't already. But there's a long list of really broken brain individuals out there that I guarantee they've already talked to and will continue to talk to.
I mean, is this because number one, does it matter why he did this? I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be some discombobulated, cognitive, fucked up distortion in his brain of why it was justified, or why, you know, some woman looked at him the wrong way in his little incel brain and he got his feelings hurt and his tiny penis didn't do anything. You know, all of the shit that makes him who he is, the pathetic blob of human DNA that is Brian Koberger. But does anything here... I mean, is this a good thing that he seems to be stirring behind bars? Does that mean that maybe at some point he'll get bored enough and start telling us more about why he did this? But at the end of the day, like I said, even if he does it even matter? I mean, does whatever equation in his mind that he came up with that ended like this, does it matter? Especially if he's saying... he didn't do it.
So here's an interesting thing with that. So let's look at what he actually has for currency, kind of like Rex Huerman. The only thing that Rex Huerman and serial killers have after the fact is knowledge. Information is their currency. And there's a lot of things that people would like some answers to, like, where'd you put the knife? Lestat, because I've always theorized, because he studied past serial killers, that he probably secreted all the things he used and stashed it someplace that we don't know.
Yeah.
Getting that kind of information would be good to do. And so as he's getting desperate for interaction and for things, that becomes a leverage point against him, where it's like, hey, Koberger, you give us this, and maybe we'll give you a little bit of attention today. And you start, so the fact that he's getting desperate for interaction, desperate for better bananas, whatever it is, it gives the government and profilers and all the other people leverage against him, because he ain't going anywhere. Give me a break.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you give a broken brain like that a little bit of hope, and we actually might get a little bit of leakage over time on this one.
I mean, it's kind of Mindhunter-ish, you know, where you get the that crew in there, the behavioral analysis crew, that can start asking some questions and examining, like Huerman, or like they did Kemper, or like they did, you know, you name it. This seems to be a bit of a tell that he's getting restless.
He's enraged. He's always been full of rage. I mean, just look at this. Rage becomes our lever of influence over him, because he's uncontrollable in his rage. And when you look at people like BTK, and you look at people like Rex Huerman, and all these other serial killers, they seemingly have the ability to maintain calm, just that stoic, no reaction, just because they're emotionless, because there's nothing in there. But Koberger, and they all have that side of sadistic rage and all those things that we know about, but Koberger has a lack of ability to seemingly control it. He's very, very emotionally reactive, and that becomes a very, very powerful thing they can use against him when it comes to interviewing.
It's gonna be fascinating.
So what's Bob say?
What did Bob say? His only two avenues are, my lawyer did not provide me all the potential exculpatory evidence, so my plea was uninformed. It's going nowhere. Okay. Well, yeah. What about that? Yeah. What about the hair thing, though? I mean, that's not necessarily, would that be considered exculpatory? We got to have this as a one-on-one conversation. we'll do that next week.
Here's what I say. Koberger, yeah. Try. Keep trying, man. You're making a great show. You're showing us how angry, and because every time he tries and doesn't get his way, what happens? He gets angrier. When he gets angrier, what happens? Comedy gold and leakage. When people get angry and emotionally hijacked, they leak information. That is the easiest way to get intelligence.
It's going to be interesting. I don't know if he does anything else.
He's suffering, like, which is great.
Yeah. And I think is the biggest tell out of all this. He's not having a good time.
No.
He's feeling he was betrayed and people lied to him, or that jail isn't as hunky-dory as he thought it was going to be when he decided to get his ticket punched and go on this ride. Sorry, it's not everything. It was cracked up to be Bri.
I don't think anyone would ever believe that Ann Taylor sold him out.
No. Oh, my God, no. Oh, God. All right.
We were worried many times that Ann Taylor was doing too good of a job.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, and yeah, sorry, Brian. You made your decisions, and now you got to live with them.
Tweet your rotten bananas.
That's a shame. Look out for those broomsticks. That's going to wrap up today's conversation. Weigh in, give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation right there. Until next time, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.